Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soucy.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soucy. The show is available on iTunes and, like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, we got through another week. Hope you're doing okay. It has been a busy week at the Soucy household. I'm chipping away at the films that have been sent to me, and we'll be talking about those in a little bit. Also, the fact in the shameless plug department, I'm in a play. I have a cameo in a play that opens next week. Miss Holmes at Richmond Civic Theater runs the next two weekends. If you go to GoRCT, don't come to see me. Come to see the show. If you're a fan of Enola Holmes, you'll dig Miss Holmes. It's about Sherlock's sister and a different Dr. Watson. So anyway, that is happening at Richmond Civic Theater. Got to drop the kid off at college this weekend. So it's been a busy time here at the household. And I do want to mention there are two films that open this week that will probably get some award recognition, or at least in the running for it. For instance, Saint Omer, which is the story of a writer who goes to attend a trial about a mother accused of killing their own kid. The writer wants to do an adaptation of Medea, and the connection between the two, there winds up being a bond between the defendant and the writer, as well as the family. The writer's also dealing with their own pregnancy, their own life, while watching this case. The two leads are very good. It is a lot of watching stuff happen in court, so you've been warned there. So I'd say come for the performances. Also opening this week at your favorite local art house is Broker. This is the first Korean film by the Japanese filmmaker who gave us Shoplifters and Nobody Knows. Song Kang-ho, as of course the dad from Parasite, he was also in The Host, is leading this group of kind of this weird quote unquote family of people that pick up orphans and sell them. What happens in Korea is apparently you just leave it in a box, no questions asked, and these folks take the babies and sell them on their own. So it's a road picture, and each has their own purpose for wanting to get into this business, whether it's debts, whether it's life. So it's a road picture. It just involves selling babies. So Broker is also opening this week. All right, I want to get to some of the titles I've been watching on home video. And it, of course, runs the gamut, which I'm happy to say. And everything, for the most part, has been pretty good. For instance, the culinary documentary Love, Charlie. This is from Kino Lorber. This is about Chicago chef Charlie Trotter. And it's great because there's an outtake at the beginning. Of course, they wind up using it in the film, even though they said they wouldn't. Of the chef who hates people, a guy who was in the 90s in the Chicago food scene, or actually not just the food scene, but in Chicago, was as big as Oprah and as big as Michael Jordan in Chicago in the 90s. I remember hearing about his restaurants a lot when I lived in the Chicago suburbs in the 90s. But on the same, on the flip side, apparently being Charlie Trotter was also a sentence. We have a lot of talking heads that speak highly of him. Emeril Lagasse worked with him, Wolfgang Puck, and he was one of the first personalities to appear on early food TV. the stereotypes of the chef who barks at everybody, that happens here. But on the flip side, he's a guy who raised plenty of money for culinary education and food security, scholarships for culinary students, made some questionable choices near the end of his life and end of his career. There's some uncomfortable news footage, if you check that out, and how he went from owning several restaurants to just one left after the Big Short in 2008. The pain of going from a three-star Michelin restaurant to a two-star. But anyway, it's a fascinating look at the food business and the personality, a chef as celebrity, one who has to rub elbows and hobnob and make sure the kitchen's going in clockwork order. So yeah, Love Charlie is out on Kino Lorber. Also out on Kino Lorber, switching tones, is the documentary Hockey Land about a small town in Minnesota, about population of 3,000. Is it Eveleth, Minnesota, which is also the home of the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame, and a mining town. And we get to follow the season. It's the final season of this high school. They're going to be consolidating with a rival high school. And we follow a couple of the players as well as how the season is going. There's comparisons to Friday Night Lights, only hockey, so that's cool. So we get to follow a couple of kids, and of course their goal is to start playing professional hockey. Also questions like, do you go into the junior leagues or do you go to college? So it's a fascinating look at small town life. And pretty good hockey footage. So that is also out on Kino Lorber, as is the 2000 Italian drama 100 Steps, a true story of a young left-wing activist in the 1970s. And this is in Sicily, where you don't even mention that there's a mafia. You don't acknowledge that there is a mafia, yet alone go on the radio and print in newspapers what's going on in your town. So he's this young guy who leads rallies, gets tossed in jail. His father will hurt him if he doesn't have any companion. And so it's, we get to see this rise, and also the friction that it brings into this kid's household, because his dad is of the stay quiet, do your business. Dad has connections. Dad's also jealous. So, but it's a fascinating look at when I think I've covered one other film previously where it's just, you just don't even mention it. And the fact that this young kid, Peppino, is able to do that. So, yeah, look for 100 Steps on Kino Lorber. And The Sporting Club. This is a social satire for 1971, and it hasn't aged all that well. This is from director Larry Pierce, who gave us films like Goodbye Columbus, A Separate Piece, Why Would I Lie, both Other Sides of the Mountain films, the film version of The Bell Jar, which is a hoot and a holler. Hard to Hold for you Rick Springfield fans. He also did Wired and Ash Wednesday. Where two businessmen and one girlfriend that the other businessman didn't expect go on a weekend in the mountains. There is a century celebration happening in this small town, and they're going to open a time capsule. And the people who live there wind up having a little more pull than the rich people who visit probably would like. So we get the class system of the weekend warriors with their, you know, fancy hunting and fishing clothes who come in the town, act like they own the place. And what happens when the people who live there their whole lives, and there is a new manager of the resort, played by a young Jack Warden. And what happens when the rich masses don't approve? So it was probably a little more subtle in 1971, and especially I mentioned Parasite when it comes to films about the class system. It doesn't quite go into Deliveranceville, but there is almost a Hatfield McCoy's feel to the rich and the locals. So, but that is out on video as well, The Sporting Club from Kino Lorber, as is the 1950s melodrama Lonely Hearts, which stars Montgomery Clift, who is an aspiring writer who winds up getting a job he doesn't want, but it gets him work and it gets him some success, notoriety, although not the way you expect. He becomes the new Miss Lonely Hearts columnist for a big city newspaper. He's hired by Robert Ryan. Always good to see Robert Ryan. Always good energy there. His wife, played by Myrna Loy, they are having some issues of their own, as is Cliff's own relationship with his girlfriend, and what happens when he gets too connected to the letters that he is answering in the newspaper, especially with one woman who's coming from a very unhappy marriage, and it is alluded to an abusive relationship. The young woman is played in her first film, in her first Academy Award nomination, by Maureen Stapleton, who is the best thing to watch about this film. And so we see the aspects of 50s journalism, the bar that is near the newspaper where everybody hangs out, the fact that, yeah, it's a guy writing as Miss Lonely Hearts. So we get to see that blur between the writer and the subject and the character that one portrays in their writing in the paper. So pretty good melodrama, good, and it helped, you know, you have good performances from Monty Cliff and Myrna Loy and Robert Ryan, and especially Maureen Stapleton. So yeah, Lonely Hearts is also out on Kino Lorber, as is the 1978 German crime drama A Knife in the Head, starring Bruno Ganz. Always fascinating to watch Bruno Ganz. And if you don't know who Bruno Ganz is, yes, he is the actor who there were videos that went online for a while of it's his famous meltdown scene as Adolf Hitler in Downfall, in the film Downfall. But Ganz plays an innocent man who's accidentally shot in the head by police. He was going to see an underground anti-government, whatever you want the police to call them, revolutionaries. He goes into an office by an organization to look for friends and is accidentally shot in the head by civilians. And the police, in order to cover it up, accused Ganz's character of being one of these revolutionaries that they were raiding the house on. And so we get two aspects of the film. The more fascinating one is the performance from Bruno Ganz, because we see him not only trying to rehabilitate himself physically, but also trying to get back at the police who are trying to frame him and cover up their own misdeeds. It's more than a revenge tale with a very good twist at the end. We also see along the way what the revolutionaries that Ganz knows and what they're trying to do as far as helping Ganz's character and get back at the police. So A Knife in the Head, even though he's shot in the head, from Kino Lorber from 1978. Also from Kino Lorber is a drama with another film featuring Vicky Creeps called Hold Me Tight. This is one you got to pay attention to, friends. Clarice is a wife and a mother and leaves her family, and we don't know why. And then it cuts between her on the road traveling and her family trying to move on without mom in the house. This is a film from director Matthew Armalek. You know him as the actor from Diving Bell and the Butterfly. He was in The Villain in Quantum and Solace, among others. And there's a gut punch of a twist I don't want to give away that happens in the film. It's not quite what you expect, but it still works. And just to see the timelines of her and what she's going through and what the family is going through, it really hurts. And so look for Hold Me Tight on Kino Lorber. A lot of Kino Lorber titles this week, friends. That's just what happens. And I also got to revisit a 1983 French drama called Entre Nous. This was a foreign film nominee from Diane Curry's, who gave us Peppermint Soda. And it's a relationship between two women that starts at a French internment camp during World War II. One of the ladies is played by Isabelle Huppert, my second Isabelle Huppert film in 2 weeks. And her character is apparently based on the director's own mother, a Jewish woman who gets married to get out of the camp and avoid the Nazis, and then is able to cross into over the Alps and escape. Along the way, she reconnects with her friend Madeline, who is an artist, and it's the actress Mia Miu. And both are dissatisfied with their roles in their lives after World War II, being the wives of prosperous businessmen. And we do see how one lost an earlier husband due to a stray bullet from the resistance. She is remarried, caught cheating, and we're not quite sure how deep the relationship is between these two women, although the jealous husband would like to think one way. And I think that's one of the strengths, is that it's just the bond between these two. And as an audience member, it's really none of our business how far this relationship is. It's just, it's very solid, and they care for each other very much. They open a shop together. And so it's a friendship that goes beyond titles. And it also helps that the actors playing the husbands are not one-dimensional characters. So Entre Nous from 1983. And probably the best of the lot that I was able to watch this week. And I had no idea about this film. It's a comedy from 1998 called A Fish in a Bathtub. And this is, I believe, the last pairing in a film, although they did appear in films together, but not as a couple, of Jerry Stiller and Ann Mira, who I've always enjoyed watching their comedy. Yes, I remember their stand-up and seeing it on TV when I was a kid. He has recently retired, sold his shop. He's been married to his wife for 40 years, trying to find something to do with his life now that the work day is over. And one day, out of nowhere, he just buys a very large fish and puts it in his bathtub. And his wife thinks, oh, this is just a temp. He'll take it back. He doesn't. And how this one moment escalates his marriage and his friend and their friendships with their peers, with their buddies. And we don't know right away why he does it. And then we find out later it's somebody he can talk to, which is devastating if you've been married for 40 years. Mark Ruffalo, the young Mark Ruffalo, plays their son. He is a real estate agent, and there is a blonde client who really, really likes him, and that will come into play later in the film. But there's a lot of familiar faces in this. And this fish winds up having a rift between a marriage and friendship with familiar faces like Doris Roberts, Paul Benedict, Val Avery, Bob Dishy. There is a fight between the married couple. Mom leaves and lives with her son. Son thinks he should live with daughter, played by Jane Addams, and she's got her own problems. So we get to see the problems of two generations of people, and what really works is the grounded performances by everybody. There's a few times in the script that it does go in the sitcom territory. There's a section at a police station. There's also a 40th anniversary party that again veers that way. But the performances, especially Stiller and Mira, who are obviously comfortable with working with each other on stage and off, you know, Ben's parents. It's really a nice piece, and it's a human film. And I was like, who did this? And I looked it up, and it was directed by Joan Micklin Silver, who is best known for a lot of cult films about human beings. Hester Street with Carol Kane, that got her her Best Actress nomination in 1975. Between the Lines, the John Hurt film Chilly Scenes of Winter, which is now getting a Criterion treatment. Crossing Delancey, that's another underappreciated film with Peter Riegert and Amy Irving. Loverboy, and one of the better early HBO films, Finnegan Begin Again, which was a love triangle between Robert Preston, Mary Tyler Moore, and Sam Waterston. So look up Joan Micklin Silver and check out some of her films, especially A Fish in a Bathtub from 1998. And finally, from 1984, also on Kino Lorber, Kino Classics. This is a documentary I've always heard about but never got a chance to see, and that's why I do this. Thank you, Kino. The documentary Kaddish from 1984, and it's a story of Yossi Klein, a young writer and activist, and the relationship with his father, Zoltan, who survived the Holocaust, but his parents did not. Parents decided to stay in their home and not move out. And Zoltan did escape and found him and a few other people who literally buried themselves in the forest and would only come out at night and stay there in underground for 6 months while his parents were killed in Auschwitz. And at this time, there were not a lot of films about the Holocaust out at that time, although Sophie's Choice had come out 2 years prior, but we were starting to get these stories in the early 80s. So we get really good footage of Yossi's dad and his story and what happened in the 40s, coming to America in the 50s. And then Yossi trying to become a writer and an activist in his own right, goes to rallies, attempted to overcome an immigration office in Moscow, and gets picked up by the KGB, and getting the support from his family, him trying to grow up and start his own family, start an underground Jewish newspaper, which is born and dies within a span of 5 years. But just seeing how the son is overshadowed by the father, embraces the shadow, and becomes his own man, but also carries the torch for the Holocaust and especially the Holocaust survivors. So really strong footage and that kind of early 80s documentary feel, and also great footage of a dilapidated, at times dilapidated New York City. But a really strong piece and one of the more important Holocaust documentaries from the early 80s. And that is Kiddush from Kino Classics. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. We will go around the horn. There are dead people we like because we never have time for dead people we don't like. And then we'll grab a pencil. We'll find out what you've been watching recently. We mentioned St. Omer and Broker are opening this week. They are at your favorite local art house. Over at IU Cinema on Thursday, January 19th, is the 2019 film Playing with Fire at 7 p.m. Go behind the scenes with Grammy-winning conductor Jeanette Sorrell, who forms her own Baroque orchestra to acclaim after being told no one would hire a woman conductor. Ah, double feature with Tar. A Q&A with Sorrell and executive producer Gina Maria Leonetti will follow the screening. Friday the 20th at 7 p.m., Triangle of Sadness, Ruben Ostrin's film about the class system on a luxury cruise ship. Friday, January 20th at 10 p.m., Not Quite Midnight series, Pee-wee's Big Adventure on the big screen. Saturday, January 21st at 4 p.m., Triangle of Sadness. And Saturday, January 21st at 7 p.m. from 1972, The Seduction of Mimi. And then Tuesday, January 24th at 7 p.m., The Conformist, the Bernardo Bertolucci film. Thursday, the 26th, Virus Tropical from 2017. That's also at 7 p.m. And Friday, January 27th at 7 p.m. is Utama. And then at 10 p.m., the film Possessor. All of that is happening at IU Cinema. At the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin, Friday and Saturday, the 13th and 14th, 2 and 7:30 p.m., The Muppets. Yes, the one with Jason Segel and Amy Adams and Chris Cooper. Friday and Saturday, January 20th and 21st, 2 and 7:30 p.m., Blade Runner, The Final Cut, the hour 57-minute version. And then January 27th and January 28th, Friday and Saturday, 2 and 7:30 p.m., from 1946, The Harvey Girls. All of that happening at the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin. Okay. We need to raise several glasses to some actors and some filmmakers that we like, because we never have time for dead people we don't like. Owen Roizman, known cinematographer, best known, his second film, first film was Stop from 1970. His first film is a director of photography, The French Connection. And then would later work on The Gang That Couldn't Shoot Straight, Play It Against Sam, The Heartbreak Kid, The Exorcist, the original Taking of the Pelham 1-2-3, the original Stepford Wives, 3 Days of the Condor, Return of a Man Called Horace, Network, Straight Time, okay, Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, The Electric Horseman, Black Marble, True Confessions, Absence of Malice, Taps, Tootsie, Vision Quest. Yes, he was a cinematographer for the Madonna videos, Gambler and Crazy for You from Vision Quest, I Love You to Death, Havana, The First Addams Family, Grand Canyon, Wyatt Earp, and French Kiss. All of those were done by this gentleman. Nominated for 5 Academy Awards, received an honorary award in 2018, and was nominated for French Connection, Exorcist, Network, Tootsie, and Wyatt Earp. That's Owen Roizman. Also, for you cult film fans, look into these, because this is one I got to watch recently. But George Barry, who is the gentleman who gave us the film Deathbed. Yes, and I know this film from the Patton Oswalt rant, and then I was able to pick it up at Indie CD and Vinyl. Shout out to the gang there for bringing that to my attention and that they had it for available. And, fairly bonkers film of the title of the film, Deathbed. It's a curse to bed. There's a human prisoner forced to watch the atrocities. And, this film got made. So, salute to Gene Barry, as well as Ruggero Deodato, the Italian filmmaker who, like a lot of artists in the 60s and 70s in Italy, first started doing Hercules films, and more athletic action films from the 60s. Hercules, Prisoner of Evil, Gunaga, The Black Panther Girl, you know, those types of pictures. Was able to do a cop film in the 70s, Live Like a Cop. Live Like a Cop, Die Like a Man. And then Jungle Holocaust, Last Feelings. And then The Concord Affair, 79, not to be confused with Concord 79, but he's probably the film title he's best known for. And just have a giant grain of salt when you watch Cannibal Holocaust from 1980. And then other films in Italy in the 80s, like Cut and Run, Body Count, The Lone Runner, and The Barbarians. That's probably the other known Italian film that was able to make it here in the States, is The Barbarians. So, yeah, salute to Rodrigo, as well as Earl Bowen. Earl Bowen is that guy who, almost 300 credits to his name, best known as the Doctor in the Terminator films. So, credits go all the way back to 1974 with Earl. And then finally, Mike Hill, who was a film editor on all of the films. He has all of them? I think, yeah, all the films from Ron Howard, from Night Shift all the way up to In the Heart of the Sea. So he didn't do the last one. But also worked on Armed and Dangerous, Pet Sematary, and Problem Child. So salute to Mike Hill. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. All right, let's grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching. Hopefully you've been able to watch films that are good films, that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. We start on Twitter with Ben, who writes, just watched the Sergio Leone Man with No Name trilogy for the first time this week and loved it. Oh, good on you, Ben. I would love to revisit the Leone films for the first time. And you got to do that. So very, very cool. Although you should also watch A Fistful of Dynamite and Once Upon a Time in America and Once Upon a Time in the West. You should, you know, so you're close to finishing the Sergio Leone collection. But I remember my kid falling in love with this trilogy when we were back in our old house at Fort Harrison, and this was M at the height, I believe, of their Hannah Montana phase. And they told me about an episode where there was a squirt gun fight, and they said it was shot like one of your movies, like a spaghetti western. The extreme close up of the eyes and the twitching mouth and the hand with the squirt gun. And I said, yeah, that's probably from an homage to The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And they asked, do you have it? And every dad wants to hear that question from, you know, an 8-year-old. And, so we sat down on a Sunday morning and got through about 2/3 of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. And what I remember saying to M was, every shot in a Leone film could be printed and framed on a wall, like a piece of art. And then, I believe the next day or later that day, we finished the film. And then they took my trilogy box set and went it and took it to their room and would just have it on in the house, in their room while they were puttering around the bedroom. So thanks, Sam. But yeah, Ben, I'm glad you got to experience that for the first time. Dan writes, White Noise, which I didn't like, despite the great acting that highlighted an interesting family dynamic, because I felt that the director neutered the book. I have not read the book, Dan, and I thought White Noise was one of the bigger disappointments that came out this year. I thought it was just a lot of territory to cover, and I know they were doing it in three acts, But I thought if they, me personally, if they had clipped some of that stuff out and made it a through line, it probably would have been a little easier to watch. Tony writes, and it was horrible. Now, I'm assuming this is the Malcolm McDowell film. Sorry you didn't like it. I think I enjoyed that. Also on Twitter, Linda writes, the Banshees of Inisherin, The House, Mrs. Harris Goes to Paris, and Tar. That's over at Twitter. We go over to Facebook. Lou Harry writes, The War Between Men and Women. Nancy writes, Ready Player One, thought I'd nap through it, but didn't. It's hard to nap through Ready Player One. It's a very loud commercial for Warner Brothers. But I hear you, Nancy. Doug writes, Little Old New York, Do Detectives Think, The Unknown, The Lady Vanishes, the 1938 version from Hitchcock, Snows of Kilimanjaro, Wakanda Forever, RRR, Triangle of Sadness, and Women Talking. I believe Women Talking opens next week. Gary writes, Odd Thomas, I Saw the Devil, Jaws, Office Space, Corsage, the Riff Tracks treatment of Night of the Living Dead. I got to see that with my kid in the theater. A lot of fun. Full House, and they were into it. Safety, Diamonds of Kilimanjaro, Incident in an Alley, The Double, and Free Guy. Nick writes, Nick Rogers, Casual Sex, Challenge of the Tiger, Cartel Land, Megan, Counting Crows, August and Everything After, live at Town Hall, Detonator, Disciples of Shalom, Diana Vreeland, The Eyes Has to Travel, Crazy Love, and the original DOA. Eric, his first views were William Wyler's final film, The Liberation of L.B. Jones, Kurosawa's final film, Madadio, The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, She Said, and Emily the Criminal. The rewatches were Treasure of the Sierra Madre, Where Eagles Dare, and Troy Donahue in Parrish. Not exactly a guilty pleasure, but certainly reacquainted from deepest childhood. Melissa writes the original Scream and The Good Nurse. Kevin writes She Said and Ticket to Paradise. Jay Bird writes, viewer discretion advised. Jeff has a bit of a breakdown, but remember, it worked out for him in the end. Oh, and there's some murder themes, too. Okay, thank you, Jay Bird. Sam Watermeyer writes, over the weekend on Friday, we did a movie theater double feature of Violent Night and Megan. And on Saturday, we saw Avatar in IMAX 3D. JJ writes, play Misty for me, Skyfall, The Pale Blue Eye, and The Fifth Chord. Eric writes, rewatched Almost Famous. Joan writes, Burn After Reading. Nancy writes, The Fablemans. Robert Muggy writes, Tar, Moonlighting, Nuts in May, and The Kiss of Death. Lucy writes, Hereditary. Craig writes, The Most Recent Eye, All Quiet on the Western Front. The rest of the time, I was binge-watching Season 3 of the original Twilight Zone. Dee Dee Servino. Dee Dee's going to be in Carmel next week, so go to see her one night and come see Miss Holmes the other night. Dr. Zhivago, Rocky IV, and Anna Karenina while drinking White Russians. Terry writes, Babylon and Manhunt. David writes, All Quiet on the Western Front, The Pale Blue Eye, and Casablanca. Britt also saw The Pale Blue Eye. Eric chimes in. I forgot. I also watched a film version of the play Awake and Sing with a fairly young and surprisingly tall Walter Matthau. Maggie writes, I watched The Menu about 4 times. Wow. Anne writes, The Swedish, the original, A Man Called Ove. That's the original film of A Man Called Otto that Tom Hanks is being grumpy in, even though he's Tom Hanks. Amanda's been to the library. Sense of Sensibility, The Most Wonderful Time of the Year, and Moonlight and Mistletoe. That's a double feature. Movine writes, Exotica, Bernadetta, Haywire, Lost Illusions, and Rain. David writes, 2 days in the Valley, Predator, the greatest story ever told, I don't feel at home in this world anymore, Gordon Lightfoot, if you could read my mind, and Jurassic World. Daniel writes, Thoroughly Modern Millie, The Phantom of the Claude Rains, Phantom of the Opera, the Claude Rains version, Spider-Man, The Long Way Home, and The Importance of Being Earnest, the 2002 version, and finally, Marianne writes, Pale Blue Eyes. And there you go, friends. That's what you've been watching this week. So hopefully you got to watch some fun films, some good films that are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. Friends, some words to live by.
Silent Breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. One other shameless plug note. This week, Golden Globus Theater are talking about the film Roadhouse. So, and in February, they do Blaxploitation Appreciation Month, and you might hear a certain film sociology guest on one of those programs. So stay tuned. Anyway, thanks for listening, and we'll do this again next week. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!